Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us on the program this week. And joining us by phone from his office is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We'd love to have your questions during our next half hour. You can call us at 496-1999. You can send emails to ask@wbaa.org. And you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks for being with us. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And I wanted to get right away to some talk about what dominated our discussion last year, which is administration of your Stellar Communities grant. Your city's Board of Works has now approved construction of the Fusion 54 project, which really is the cornerstone of your grant proposal. Did you get all of the design that you wanted for the money that you were hoping to spend?
Well, what we approved yesterday was the design contracts, and we're pretty deep into that, and we needed to get those contracts approved. But yeah, we're pretty comfortable that we're going to have everything included in that facility that we wanted to see included. Again, so we can fuse together all those growth entities and really create some synergy and some dynamics and make good things happen. So we've had very good discussions with the state officials, and we've been able to work into the project all the things that we wanted to see there.
What is the first sort of Stellar-related change that you think people are physically going to be able to see this calendar year?
Well, the first physical thing, I think, it's pretty safe to say, will be the Pocket Park in the downtown at the intersection of Washington Street and Pike Street. That project is a local project that fits into Stellar. You know, we're not using federal funds, so we can move pretty quickly there. And our goal is to really have that project under construction in a few months and completed, you know, by late summer, early fall, somewhere in there.
What about some of the big stuff like the Ben-Hur building? Because I know that's also something that would be the sort of, I think, kind of crown jewel if you get
right.
Everything that you were hoping for. What is the timeline on that?
Yeah, Ben-Hur building has kind of been a little bit of a floating timeline, and we think it's going to take off any time. What you find in a project like that is that as you go to apply funds, you have to make sure that everything in the past title is spotless and you move forward. So attorneys have been working to make sure all of that is vetted and clean, and my understanding is that they're nearly done with that process, and it should move forward pretty quickly. From the time that document is completed, things will start to happen pretty rapidly there, and people will see exterior work occurring, and they'll know that something is physically happening there. So I think we'll see outside exterior work happen there in the next 2 months, probably.
Is there any sort of hiccup that you've hit in that process, or indeed in any of these other processes that have slowed down your timeline?
Well, we're ahead of schedule on every project, and that's not to say that each one might have a wrinkle here and there that concerns us that we're watching. You know, the Ben-Hur building, like I said, there's some title issues to work through. There was also an underground fuel storage tank on site that nobody seemed to know about. We had to kind of work through that. So you run into small issues, you know, such as those. But overall, we are ahead of schedule on everything. The other piece that's probably the most challenging, there's a couple pieces challenging, but the trail pieces each have their own unique challenge. One, because it involves the Big Four Trail involves moving a currently active rail line and decommissioning that line. So the scary part for me there is that largely gets out of our control, and it's in the hands of the railroad itself. So anytime that happens, that makes me a little nervous, but I'm confident we're on schedule there. And then the other travels through our downtown. The trail moves through the downtown, and that's a complex, complicated scenario to figure out. But we think we have a good handle on it, and we're well on schedule there.
And we've certainly talked on this program about your conversations with people at railroads before. Let me just branch off onto that for a second. How are those discussions going? Have you had any different sort of relationship with the likes of CSX to try to get these things worked out?
I think the relationship is strengthening because these things are all interrelated. As we're moving that rail line and realigning how they deliver product to some of our local industries, that has a direct effect on blocked rail crossings, and some of the rail crossings that are in really bad shape will actually be going away as part of this process. So this is all intertwined. And CSX has given us a strong commitment to restructure their lines in our community to improve flow so we don't have the blocked crossings. You know, and right now, I have to take them at their word, and we've been very successful for the last few months. I hesitate to say that. I'm afraid once I say that, that we'll have some bad things happen, but we've not had the major crossing blockages for quite some time now, and we think we're on the right path here.
Back to one more Stellar-related question. I noticed that the County Visitors and Convention Bureau is looking for some people to fill open positions, and normally this is not the kind of thing I would consider news. However, I got to thinking about how that interfaces with Stellar, and one of the things that obviously Stellar is designed to do is give greater notoriety to cities, try to make them seem like hipper places for people to come. And that, of course, has been one of your goals, is try to attract younger professional people. So does it matter, perhaps more than it normally would, who's on this board?
It absolutely matters. You know, and I think all of these growth entities and their boards are kind of wrestling with this right now. You know, to make sure our boards understand the vision and they're really moving down that path, and to make sure that we have staffing in these organizations that can really understand where we're headed with these things. And I was just in a meeting this morning where we were talking, you know, we have to make some decisions on some of these key leaders in these organizations, and your gut tells you, hey, let's get somebody with a tremendous amount of experience. And then you also have to balance out that, you know, we're trying to appeal to young people. Maybe we need somebody younger who understands this different way of thinking. So we're trying to strike a balance with those. But it's now is a very critical time.
Do you have a roster of people from whom you're choosing, or do you have personal favorites who you might put forward and say, hey, this person might be good for this job?
Well, most of those are made by the boards of those nonprofits, and sometimes I participate in that decision, sometimes I don't. But you know, I think they're all becoming very aware of the vision and how they can help shape that and foster that and move that forward, and they're really taking that into consideration when they're making these decisions. But they're casting the net far and wide to make sure we can get the most talented people we can possibly recruit.
While we're on the subject of trying to repopulate boards, it's been a couple of months since you and I have talked about your process of trying to reform the city's Human Rights Commission. And the last we spoke, you were having some trouble getting a diversity of representation on that board. And so
right.
I wanted to check in with you and see if that was if that had changed at all.
That's coming along nicely. And I have a series of meetings with prospects set for actually the next couple of weeks. And I will be taking that to the board, to the council, in March. I really wanted to get it in sooner, and we kind of got delayed with Stellar and some of those things. But I have a series of meetings set up, like I said, with some potential people to put on that commission, and should be ready to propose that to the council for their March meeting.
You had mentioned that some members of the minority groups that you had gone to seemed somewhat reticent to be on the board. Is your pitch to them this time around any different now that you've seen that people are in some communities not all that eager to jump onto the board?
Well, I don't know that my pitch has changed. I just try to help them understand the importance of what we're trying to do. And I really come down to this in the end. You know, we want everyone's view and everyone's experience represented on that commission. And different people have different experiences within the same community. And it's important that all those voices, come together to create what we're trying to create here. And I think people understand that. You know, where we largely had maybe some reluctance before was largely in the Hispanic Latino community. And I think that's not really reflective of our community, just reflective of different cultures in general. A little hesitant to get involved in government affairs, and I understand that.
Have you had to go back to the well and try and find even more people, or are you reapproaching any of the same people after giving them a little bit more time to think about what they might bring to the board?
Both adequately. You know, I mean, we're actually circling back on those conversations. People have had time to think about it, so we kind of come back to that. And then, some new names surfaced and some new possibilities and reached out to get some recruiting help. And I think it's all coming together. But we had a nice response within our community when we put the initial call out. So, you know, I'm working through that list as well. And if anything, I wish I could make the commission bigger than what it really is going to be, but I am limited by the ordinance, so I would have to come back and ask the council to make it larger. So we'll work within the confines of the existing ordinance and go from there.
As you've gone through this process, have there been any more complaints like the ones that led you in the middle of last year to think about doing this in the first place?
We've not heard anything recently. You know, we had a series of issues raised last year, and we want to revisit and look at those issues, but I've not heard anything, you know, in the last several months.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, and we would welcome your questions into this discussion. Call us at area code 765-496-1999. Send your emailed questions to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. And you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, your city has some of its police officers wear body cameras, others not. And I wanted to ask you about a bill that's up in the legislature right now that would actually make it a little bit tougher in some ways to get the footage from those body cameras to either be available through a public records request or to be available outside of any sort of within any sort of criminal investigation. As your city looks at what you're doing with body cameras, where do you come down on legislation like that?
You know, I've not seen that particular piece of legislation, but I think I probably lean more towards the side of, you know, we want to know that there's some, you know, I think anytime you look at footage like that, you're really looking at one piece of the big picture in those situations. And I think our society has really drifted into the trap of, you know, thinking that encompasses everything that was happening in that scene and drawing some very rapid instant conclusions, if you will. So I think we need to be cautious with that. And many times when you're looking at that footage, there are victims involved, and we forget about that. I think everybody says, you know, we want to know what happened with the police and so on. But keep in mind, there are a lot of victims involved in this footage as well. So I think there need to be some safeguards there to protect this from just being pulled out and wanted all over social media all the time. So I'm confident that something will come out that's a middle-of-the-road balance and that we have some safeguards. But on the other hand, you know, when there is a need to know that can be accessed and evaluated.
Is your city hoping to add body cameras to all of its officers in the near future?
We're going to have that discussion probably in the next few months, and it will really come down to a matter of funding and prioritizing things. We have several things on the horizon that we need to think about, and body cameras is one of those things that we're going to have to discuss, yes.
How do you decide right now which officers carry them and which don't?
That's a question that I probably can't answer, so I'm not sure. You know, that is decided within the police department, and I'm not sure how they're making those decisions and who's wearing them and who's not.
With respect to the release of the data from the body cameras, generally speaking, where do you come down on that idea? Would you like to have it be more available with your caveat earlier that it is indeed only one piece of an investigation or one piece of evidence? Or do you think it is better kept in-house? For instance, Chris McBarnes last week on this program was talking about what Frankfurt is doing to try to implement body cameras. And he says one of the things we're doing is we have private meetings with police and with people who request the body camera footage. And so it's not releasing it publicly. It's here's people sitting in a room together watching the footage at the same time and discussing what they see. Where on that spectrum do you fall personally?
Well, I think, again, probably somewhere in the middle of the road like that. I mean, I don't think we want a situation, you know, in which anyone can walk in at any time and say, I want to see the footage from my neighbor's domestic dispute last night. I want to know what my neighbors were arguing about. And if you don't have any safeguards in there, that's where you're going to end up. So we need to have some safeguards. And I think there needs to be, whether a court determines the need or there are some pre-established triggers that would allow someone to access these things, I think there needs to be something in there. The idea of watching it together and walking them through is probably not a bad idea either. I'm not really in favor of, you know, like I said, anybody can walk in anytime and say, I want to see what happened last night at my neighbor's house.
We mentioned the bill that respects body cameras. I wanted to ask you more generally, are there other pieces of legislation that are being discussed in this year's session that you and other city leaders are particularly watching to see how they come down one way or the other?
Well, this year's been pretty quiet, I think, for cities with, you know, when we look at the legislative issues. I'm not hearing much going on, really, and I think it's, at least for me, it's one of those years we're kind of catching our breath and just hoping that nothing changes dramatically. You know, that's the thing to keep in mind with the legislature. As they make these changes, it takes a while for that to play out and to really understand the implications. So when they're making changes back to back, year to year, we really didn't even have time to absorb what happened last year and really understand how it affects us before something else happens. So for me, the fewer changes that happen, the better.
I've been on to another topic. I've been watching from afar the tale of a young man in your community, Sam Jackman, and there seems to be this incredible rally behind this young man, such that even Tuesday of this week was proclaimed Sam Jackman Day in the city. Can you tell me a little bit about his story and why it seems to have touched a nerve both with you and with others?
Well, you know, he's a freshman at North Montgomery High School, and he's battling leukemia. And I think the thing that strikes everyone is his outlook, his attitude, and the way he stays positive and moves through such adversity. You know, to spend months and months in the hospital and during these treatments and the side effects of these treatments, and you know, that's tough for anyone, but for a 15-year-old, that is, I think, probably especially daunting. And as I started to learn about him and read about him and read about how he was approaching this, I was pretty taken by it. So I had the chance to meet him last week and spend some time with him, and just an incredible young man that, you know, as we talk about keeping young people in our community and developing young leaders for our community to take us into the future, he is exactly the kind of person we're talking about. And you know, it just strikes, I think, at everyone's heart that everyone wants to rally and be behind him. And you know, what happened this week with the proclamation and such, you know, we knew that he needed a boost. You know, he's enduring this, he's doing a great job, let's keep him going, let's kind of cheerleading and rally and get behind him. So it all came together very nicely.
There are a lot of these sorts of proclamations that go out, and at the same time, there are lots and lots of sick children, it is sad to say, in many communities. But this is one of those times where it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a substantial portion of your population has gotten behind this effort in one way or another, whether it's wearing orange the other day in support of him, or whether it's going and seeing him or learning more about his story. And it also seems to me that there are not that many times in a community where this sort of adherence to one idea happens across such a broad swath of the community. Is this something that you kind of realized, hey, we can leverage this as a way to show people that we are one community, we act together, we can get behind ideas with a singular voice?
Well, I think his story, I think it just, it captures everyone, and it may be a little bit of a unique way, but in this particular case, you know, it just reaches across they're average people. You know, they're people you can relate to, and everyone has had children, and you've thought about these kinds of things and how you would approach this, and it just appeals and it strikes to everyone. But his attitude and way of approaching this just really sets this apart sometimes. But you know, when you point out that you don't see communities coming together like this very often, I think our community is probably a little bit of an exception there. People in this community really rally behind those who are going through tough times, probably more so than other communities. So it's not a stretch to see this in our community. This happens here.
We've got just about 10 minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton today on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. We'd love to have your questions. Call them in at 496-1999. Send emails with questions to ask@WBAA.org and tweet those questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, while we're on the subject of health in the community, I noticed that Franciscan St. Elizabeth Crawfordsville is going to spend about $15 million to build a new emergency room to its facility there. You, of course, were a firefighter and a paramedic in your previous job. So I wanted you to tell me, put on that hat for a second, and give me your perspective on what this does for patients in your community.
Well, it's very exciting, and I will say long overdue, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but the current facility was constructed in the mid to early 1980s, and many, many things have changed in our society since then, not the least of which is emergency medicine and how we approach, caring for people who are acutely ill or injured. So, they have far outgrown their current facility, and you have to realize we're sitting in a situation in which that is the hub for our, not only our county, but some of the other rural counties. If you have a medical crisis, that is it. And it's comforting to know that we're going to have an up-to-date, state-of-the-art facility right here in our backyard.
What happens in a lot of mid-sized communities like yours is that if there is a serious medical condition, someone is taken to the nearest bigger city, be that Lafayette or Indianapolis for you. Do you see that this will stop some people from having to go those extra miles to get treatment?
Well, I don't know that that will necessarily be the case. You know, usually when you get into that situation, you're dealing with someone who needs the more advanced specialized care, whether it's, cardiac intensive care or it's trauma services and going to a level one trauma center. You know, we still only have two of those in the state of Indiana. They're both in Indianapolis. So I don't think it's necessarily going to change that, but it certainly could create a better outcome by allowing more things to be done here locally before you are sent on. And I know there's a lot of work with stroke patients and really how we can bring the specialists in through technology to start caring for them while they are still here before they physically get moved to the next facility. So it will certainly help, but I don't think it will, reduce people being moved on that need higher levels of care.
So taking into account what you just said about there being only a couple of level one trauma centers in the state and understanding that smaller hospital campuses don't have all of the same services, what does Crawfordsville still need that it is likely that you could get that you don't have?
As far as emergency services?
As far as any sort of health services that the community might utilize.
Yeah, our health department's getting ready to release some more data, and they've been doing a lot of research on this. But I think the clear impression that I'm receiving is that we just need more access to primary care. We still think we have an access problem, more primary care physicians. And I've had very good discussions with the Franciscans on this and a few other entities, and it really comes down to a situation in which it's hard to recruit new physicians into these smaller to mid-sized communities. So we have to do a better job of creating, and this, again, strikes at the heart of Stellar, a community in which they can see a future. They want to come here, and they know there's a good, stable market here, and there's a quality of life that is acceptable, for younger people. So that is our big challenge right now, is getting those primary care providers in here in adequate numbers so that people don't have to travel outside the community for those things. The specialist services, I think we're doing a pretty good job. We offer a wide array of services here locally, through people who come in for a day a week or a day every other week, something like that. So I would go back to primary care, and then of course, my focus is on the preventative stuff and how can we create a healthier community. And that, again, strikes at the heart of Stellar with the trail system and the different options that we offer through our park and rec and all the private providers here.
In terms of getting more doctors to the community, is that something where you need the existing hospital systems to take the lead and expand their campuses? Or is there something, for instance, the city could do to make it appealing for young doctors to come and start their own practices and establish a storefront, for lack of a better way to put it, within the city?
Traditionally that's been left up to the existing providers, in our case, largely the Franciscans. But we are rethinking that a little bit and asking ourselves if maybe there aren't some things we could be doing. We are engaged more than ever as far as helping them recruit. So when they have, potential recruits looking at the area, we certainly are willing to be there and be a part of the sales pitch, if you will. But we've never really taken a direct role, and we've never really had, if you will, incentives for providers to come here. But that is something that we're starting to at least think about, because we're probably going to have to approach this a little differently.
There was a report around you not too long ago that showed that a number of small communities in your neck of the woods have lost their town marshals or just failed to replace them. And I thought back to something that Mayor Tony Rozworski of Lafayette told me last year, and he said he was worried that there were people coming in from small towns around here, the Atticas and the Delphis of the world, and committing crime in Lafayette. Do you share that same sort of worry based on the fact that some of these smaller communities around you might have a smaller law enforcement presence within them?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting theory, and it may well be true. I've not seen any data or heard anything that would suggest to me that we see that occurring. I guess I look at it and think if we have a strong law enforcement presence in our community, that's certainly a deterrent for those who might want to come here and do things. And I don't know what would keep them from doing that in the smaller communities where they don't have a stronger law enforcement presence. So haven't really thought through that. And we've certainly increased our number of officers on the street the last few years, and we think that's paying dividends, and we're going to stay the course there.
Have you had a chance to look at any of the crime data from 2015 yet to see whether there were any positive signs or things that need improvement in terms of policing going forward?
There's always a lag in that data, so it's a little hard to look at sometimes. It is a little dated, but we certainly do evaluate that. We will continue to do that. What we do know is that we're seeing much more proactive cases on the behalf of our police department because they're able, with more officers, to not just be out there taking calls, responding to things. They can actually get out ahead of things and target areas in which we know we have issues and really get in there and try to be proactive and root out some of these things. And we're seeing that. We see those arrests quite a bit, and the public has really noticed it as well. But what you're seeing with the small communities and the town marshals, I mean, we just have to recognize this for what it is. And we are a few years into property tax caps now, and these things are all the result of the tax caps. When the pie is so big and you can only tax so much, you have to prioritize. And, you know, I think it's probably easy for a small community to say, well, you know, something has to go and the sheriff's department's going to provide us service, so we can't really afford to duplicate it right now.
There's been talk both at the state level and in the greater Lafayette area about fighting drug crime. Are you seeing that that's a priority for your law enforcement agencies there too?
It absolutely is. When you look at crime in our community or probably any community, it is fueled by the drug problem. And we're taking a serious look at that. We're being very aggressive on two fronts. One, with law enforcement to get out there and be proactive, both in the patrol division and then our investigations division and our narcotics officers. We're very aggressive with that, and I think they're doing a very good job there. We want to send a loud message that's not welcome in our community. And then we also have really the economic development front, trying to create opportunities for people to prevent them from going down that path.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, we have unfortunately run out of time, but thanks for your time as always, and we look forward to talking again next month.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can send questions anytime to ask@WBAA.org, and all these shows are archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com.